has reasons for which reasons know nothing. Hi, and welcome to Be Nudged by Maya. This is Ritika, your host for today. And I am joined by Arjun Manohar, co-founder of Maya, who is also a researcher and an analyst. Today's podcast is a story about who we are, why we built Maya, and also a small dive into the world of understanding human behavior. I will just add a small detail here. So both of us started as researchers and then moved into slightly different paths where I went into marketing and Arjun went into analytics. So since research is the common point, you might be hearing that word a lot in our podcast. Also, Arjun and I met each other while we were working in this company as conversion optimization consultants. Arjun was the person I shadowed to learn conversion rate optimization from, and he was the initial members who joined the company, and he trained new joinees, and I happened to be one of them. Over the course of the time, we handled multiple clients and also did some research, which I think was the point where we realized that marketing or conversions are all about understanding human behavior, and that we need to look beyond data and really try to understand why people behave the way they do. So Arjun, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us about your journey that led to the creation of Maya?
Thank you for that wonderful introduction. So my journey as a researcher started when I was doing my master's in London. And I met this wonderful professor who told me a lot about strategy and mergers and acquisitions and etc. So I got into strategic market research, but I kind of felt that there is more to this topic. Then when I came to India, like you said, we started in conversion rate optimization, and I felt like the best way to tackle this field of study is to understand human behavior. One thing led to another. I went to marketing research, and then that's who I am. Personally speaking, I'm a true and true petrol head. I grew up watching Top Gear like everyone else, and their opinions pretty much became my opinions. And that's when I started realizing, you know, when I started studying principles like Cialdini's principles of persuasion, you know, how someone's point of view can have a big influence on your point of view. For example, they long argued that the Beetle and the Toyota Prius is a car they love to hate. And having driven these cars, you know, my perceptions of these cars completely changed. And then that got me to question, like, why am I basing my decisions or my likings on someone who I really look up to because they're influential, because I hold so much weightage to their thoughts? I mean, that's really irrational of me.
So that's interesting. I would not classify myself as a petrol head, but I do love cars. I think my choices are also influenced by the people around me, though I do not really acknowledge that. But I think that is what it is. And if you think about you and Top Gear and how your choices will influence, that there are examples of Robert Cialdini's principle of psychology and influence. And there was authority and social proof both at play, because you regard them as people whom you respect and look up to. And the other thing is, if they are saying that it is right or it is wrong, you agree to that. So we've always been a part of that unconsciously in being influenced by the things around us. Though we pay very little importance to it, that definitely does exist. And I believe that as a marketer, we need to understand people, and they are not perfect. Just like our decisions were influenced by the things around us, people's decisions are also influenced by the things that are around them. So people are, neither they are perfect, nor the information they have is perfect. So it's natural that the decisions they make, they would also not be perfect. But what people are great at is making great non-catastrophic decisions. And behavioral economics helps us understand this behavior, the imperfect behavior, and it accounts for the irrationality and biases that influence human decisions. But in this data-heavy age, this is something that is not widely used.
Yeah, I think you drive a very important point of data heavy age, because I got this little statistics I'm going to throw out there, that 73% of the company, the data they use goes, the data they use for analytics goes completely unused. And that begs the question, like, why are we craving more and more data if we haven't figured out a way to analyze it and use it for our research, right? And this is fundamentally the problem with like how we attack problems and solutions, you know. So let me drive a quick example here, right? So we all know economics, and it is a field of study that that applies to, I would say, all walks of life. But standard economics is very logical, is very quantifiable. And, you know, it's grounded in formulas and algorithms, right? It's very, very objective in nature in the way they look at problems and solutions. But behavioral economics is an extension of the same economics, traditional economics, but except they believe that human behavior is irrational, precisely like how you said, they are myopic, we are sensitive, we are emotional. And the truth is, while this might sound depressing, behavioral economics, what we are trying to do is we want to understand why people make mistakes, because if we understand why we make mistakes, then we are more likely to correct our own actions. And isn't that what That's we true. All want? Like, we just want to be better. And that is why I believe that behavioral economics has the power to do massive changes.
I think I really agree. And that statistic that 73% of data goes unused, that itself tells that our reliance on data is in itself is not exactly irrational.
Precisely.
And so I think people relate themselves with being rational. So just like when we talked about top care influencing you and my surroundings influencing my choices, I am not consciously aware that that is happening. I think that my choices are very rational. But in reality, there are myriad of factors that play a role when I make a decision. And so that is with others. And behavioral economics takes a slightly pessimistic approach, as you said, and it acknowledges that there is a rationality in human behavior, and it is nothing less than an enigma.
You bring up a really interesting point, because we at Maya, we just didn't want to be logical. We also wanted to be psychological. I mean, if you look at all the data, the speculations and projections, they only work until there's a black swan moment, which no one was expecting. And case in point is the US election of 2016 when Trump got elected. I mean, what a shocker to everyone else, right? And every single projections, every single news outlet, the way they were covering the media is like Hillary, the next female president, and then boom, Donald Trump. I mean, what happened there? Like, what happened to all your data? What happened to all your statistics? Like, did that just go out of the window? And I think the point here is that Donald Trump, or whatever he did, he spoke a different message. He broke a status quo, and he was kind of attracting or speaking to the needs of a very specific target audience. And they rallied behind him like there was no tomorrow. I mean, like, that's so emotionally charged that it made such a big difference in the dynamics of that country and the way it's working right now and the issues that exist in the country. I mean, I'm not going to get political here, but like, you know, this kind of influence, you know, it plays a big role in the way people perceive information, you know, and exchange information as well. And this irrationalities, you know, they drive people to make decisions which, you know, are unfathomable. And it's questions like these which we wanted to answer when we started Maya. And we started Maya on three strategic pillars: research, analytics, and behavioral economics. And really the key word here is behavioral economics, because we wanted that to be our guiding light, you know, our source of truth, our source of answers, the one which we turn up to, you know. That's really why we started. And for people who are thinking, what is Maya? Maya simply means courage. in Maori, and we wanted to have that courage to take a different stand and look at things from a different spectacle, because we were excited to see what we would find. And that spectacle or that glasses for us was behavioral economics.
Mm-hmm. That is true, and I don't think I can explain it any better. So I completely agree that behavioral economics is certainly the guiding light, the North Star that Maya looks up to. And I think that we as individuals, both of us are very open to experimenting and just seeing that what happens if, you know, and that is the spirit of Maya. We are on the lookout for new ideas to learn and unlearn. And most importantly, we are not afraid of the ambiguity of experimenting.
Yep. Experimenting is really important. And, you know, we do that to rationalize stuff, right? There are multiple examples of this. You know, no one gets stuff right on the first go, right? It's just irrational to think that. Let's check James Dyson, you know. And if it wasn't for his experiments, the world wouldn't have many cool things. Or let's take Steve Jobs, you know. If Steve Jobs went the rational way and created a phone, it would pretty much look like the phone that was already in the market, because that is a formula that worked. But then he turned the formula upside down on people's head and then created the iPhone. Mm-hmm. People said there's no use for a touchscreen. Now, look at us now. Have you seen a phone with a keypad? I mean, what gives?
That is true. That is true. And talking about Dyson, it's weird that when you think of a cleaning equipment, you think of a vacuum cleaner, and you would not ideally pay that exorbitant of a price for it. But for Dyson, I really do not mind paying. It replaced that vacuum cleaner, cleaning equipment thing to itself. I think that is the ability you have when you just start experimenting and see that what happens if you do something, right? And by the way, this reminds me of a book I'm currently reading. So it's called Alchemy, The Surprising Power of Ideas That Do Not Make Sense. It's by Rory Swillant, Vice Chairman of Ogilvy. So he also talks about various things which actually did not make sense, but later on, they did turn around the industry itself, and they revolutionized the way things were supposed to work. And so this book, I think it is, I would highly recommend it. And if you're anybody remotely interested in cracking the human code, this is the book for you. It is full of delightful instances that will make you laugh at every page, or rather, every paragraph or every line that you read. And more importantly, I think it will help you understand the power of magical ideas, which are more often than not complemented by ambiguity.
Tell you what, that sounds like a really interesting book, and I think I have to check it out. But speaking of things that do not make sense and cracking human code, throughout this conversation, I believe at multiple points we have contested the rationalities of human decision making. And I think it's safe to say that reasons make an astonishingly small part of our decisions. And the real reason I bring this up is because I was doing some research into how people use public transport and how it can curb pollution and congestion in city centers. And it turns out that most metro cities actually have a really good selection of public transport system. But most people stick to the option they know best, which is driving their own car, even if there is a more efficient and cheaper means of commuting. In fact, I came across this interesting study done on London tube riders. The study was conducted in 2014 during the tube strikes, where a lot of passengers were forced to find new routes for their daily office commute. But once normal service resumed, only 5% of these passengers stuck to the new routes, and most of them returned back to the old routes. I think this just goes to show that human beings are rigid, habitual creatures, and we don't actually change our habits unless we are compelled to or forced to. But forcing someone to do something simply does not work. Sooner or later, they will revert back to their old ways, which is probably why only 5% of the commuters stuck to the new route. So the question I'm trying to answer with my research is, How can we make long-lasting change? And I reckon this is where behavioral economics can come into the picture, especially nudges. Because if you were to carefully design a system of nudges that constantly reminded people about the perks of using a well-connected system, then we could possibly improve ridership and reduce congestion in city centers. For example, in my article, I've illustrated how Dubai uses an all-encompassing app that maps your daily commute across metros, buses, trams, and recommends you the best possible route on a daily basis. To me, I think this app is essentially a collection of all nudges, like framing, because it frames information in a simplistic manner. Decision staging, it makes the choice of which route to take easier for you. And it's this system of nudges that is coming together and really improving the use of public transport in Dubai. I believe such a system is much better than strict anti-congestion policies or fines, which might only aggravate people and force them to stick to their ways. And they might just end up opting to pay for the fines than to choose to ride the metro or take public transport.
While you were talking about this, I figured that that is exactly what nudges are, right? They are not removing anything from what you have. You still have your car. You can still take your car if you want to. And there are metros and there's public transport there. So you have everything and you have a choice to make. But they are pushing you to make a different choice. And that's the power of a nudge. It is not mandatory. And it relies on freedom of choice, and you always have options. But the fact that it helps you channel your actions into a direction is the power of nudges.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, so this has been an awesome conversation, Arjun. And I think that is it for today. Do you want to add any points?
No, I think we pretty much nailed everything we wanted to bring up in today's discussion. And this really addresses the power of nudges, the power of behavioral economics, and what we want to achieve through Maya. And so stay tuned. We have more awesome content like this coming up. Check out our website for more case studies. And just be human, everybody.
Yeah. So in addition to checking out our website, if you want to talk to us, you can find us on LinkedIn by the name Arjun Manohar and Ritika Swarup Srivastav. I know that's a pretty long name, but that it is. So on that note, we hope you like the podcast. This is Be Nudged by Maya, and these are your hosts, Ritika and Arjun, signing off. See you next week, and until that time, be human, have courage, and believe in the possibility of magic. See you next time.